Our lives are changing daily and in some instances hourly as officials try to avoid a mass onslaught of patients and pressure on our healthcare systems. We're checking in regularly with the head of the Hawaii Healthcare Association. Hilton Rathel sat down with us last week to talk about how our medical facilities are bracing for this crisis now that a pandemic has been declared by the World Health Organization.
This is evolving daily, and so there is a lot of information that's coming out. In some ways, the information is overwhelming because it is evolving so quickly. The World Health Organization did declare this a pandemic earlier this week, and then President Trump restricted flights from much of Europe, and now we have national basketball teams shutting down their season, sports teams shutting down their season. Disneyland just announced in California that they are shutting down. Conferences are being canceled. I actually was supposed to be in Southern California this week, but that conference got canceled. So there is a very widespread awareness of COVID-19 and its potential impact, and it is having a huge impact in Hawaii, in the United States, and around the globe. So we're getting calls from our members, we're getting calls from all sorts of, from physicians, we're getting calls from businesses about what is going on, what are best practices. So there's a lot of questions out there, and sometimes we are, we don't necessarily have all the answers, and so we are going to different sources to get information that we can pass on to our members and help them.
So Queens has erected a triage tent. I think initially it was part of a drill, and the decision's been made to keep it up, just to make sure they're ready if there is an onslaught of patients. There's nobody in there now, but obviously as people drive by, they're seeing this and they're just, wondering what's up. And so I think Kaiser tells me that they're talking about it, but no decision's been made. So we just want to be ready in case we need to, act quickly if there are a number of cases that are discovered here in the community.
Well, that is correct. And actually the tent, you are correct about Queens, that they had a scheduled tabletop, what we call a tabletop exercise, which is when a group of people get in a room and go through a scenario and they talk about how they would respond to a particular scenario. And obviously the one that we're focusing on today was a pandemic such as COVID-19. In regard to the tent they stood up this morning, they're actually doing some screening for COVID-19. So that is the purpose of the tent. So they actually have people who are doing testing for COVID-19, doing some screening for COVID-19. And we are talking to all of our hospitals. Actually, we have a call scheduled for all the acute care hospitals across the state to discuss the value and efficacy of doing screening, essentially clinics, for COVID-19. And so we're going to be talking about, and we're working with the payers as to, what's covered, what's not covered, how to bill for these type of things. So there is a lot of planning and activity that is going on to ensure that healthcare providers are very well equipped to deal with different scenarios and different contingencies.
And probably the Healthcare Association has a long list of things. Once a pandemic has been declared and then, you folks spring into action. So I imagine that we'll be seeing a lot of this over the next few weeks.
Well, that is correct. We hope, obviously, that we don't actually get it in a pandemic here in Hawaii. That would be the ideal scenario. We've been very fortunate to date to have a very, very limited number of cases confirmed cases of COVID-19. Our hospitals do prepare, and our hospitals and our long-term care facilities, all of our providers prepare throughout the years for different types of disaster scenarios. And so we have emergency communications set up, protocols set up, where we can communicate with each other across the state. We stand up our command centers at different institutions. We have different type of communication modalities. So if in the event of a natural disaster, let's say the power went out, we're not dependent on power for communication devices. So we have different forms of communication so people can keep in touch with each other, hospitals, other healthcare organizations, emergency services personnel, can keep in touch with each other and coordinate activities. So preparing for sickness and disease is something that all of our members do. They deal with it on a regular basis. This is an acute episode, or potentially at least in Hawaii an acute episode, but our medical personnel, our responders, are well prepared, and there's so much information coming out from the Department of Health, the centers, the CDC, other organizations and national affiliates. I was on a video conference call this morning with the American Hospital Association at 5:30 our time, and we spent an hour just talking about COVID-19. So there is a lot of preparation, planning, and activity going on, and a heightened awareness of what people should be doing, could be doing. But that being said, the situation is still evolving, and so guidance is evolving from the CDC, Department of Health, in regard to testing. We still have limited testing right now, right as of today. Only the state lab and TRIPLA can test for COVID-19. Clinical Labs of Hawaii, they started testing as well, but they're having to send the tests, they're collecting tests, but they're having to send them to the mainland right now, and it's approximately 4 to 5 day turnaround. So, and DLS and Kaiser are also working to get their testing up and running for COVID-19, but as of today, only the state lab and TRIPLA can test for COVID-19 in the state, but which limits our capability in the state, limits our turnaround time. But the good news is that we can test in the state, and our other labs will be able to test. They are working very, very hard to be able to test in the state, and hope to have that capability within the next 1 to 2 weeks, which increases the number of tests we can do, and it reduces, because we can test more in the state, it reduces the turnaround time. So typically you'd get a turnaround time within the state of about a day, as opposed to 4 to 5 days for the clinical labs in Texas, and approximately 5 to 7 days for the state lab if they have to send a test across to the CDC in Atlanta, Georgia.
Right. So once we get to that point where our capacity is increased, then we can get a better handle if more people need to get tested. But at this point, it's very limited.
Yes, we still have limited capability. And most states, if not all states across the nation, still have limited capability in terms of how many tests they can run in any day. So that is expanding over time. But again, this is a new virus, and so we didn't have these huge stockpiles of tests, so it has taken a while to build up the capability, and the CDC and the manufacturers of these test kits, they are working incredibly hard to get as many test kits out there as available. But it is still ramping up across the U.S. and The U.S. has very stringent guidelines when it comes to testing, and so there may be tests in other countries that are more prevalent, but they may not have the same specificity or the same reliability as the tests that are being done here, and that's a decision that the U.S. Federal government has made, that they do want to ensure that when the testing is done, that there are very high standards and you don't get a lot of false positives or a lot of false negatives.
That's a good point, because we are reading the headlines online and you know, you're hearing, oh, this one country is developing a rapid result test. You know, another one is relying on lung screenings so they can diagnose people faster and get treatment to those who need it instead of waiting for several days to get their results back. So people may be wondering, well, gee, why can't we just get some from Japan or get some from another country? But that's the reason.
Yeah, that's exactly that reason, and I would strongly support that, because getting false positives, which is someone tests positive for a disease but they don't have it, that's a false positive. A false negative is if someone has the disease and the test doesn't show it. So you want to have very few false positives and you want to have very few false negatives. You want the test to be highly accurate, highly reliable, have a high degree of specificity, so it's not picking up some other disease, because you can get a false positive if you're picking up some other virus, for example, that is not COVID-19, because there are other coronaviruses out there.
Right, so cause that's stress.
That's what we want. That is, you know, it's a very, very good practice to do that, and the labs and the federal government are working very, very hard to increase the number of tests that are available. so that we can screen more individuals.
And let's talk about drugs, because I think a couple of weeks ago when we talked with you, you folks said that your members were working, you know, very hard to make sure that they had adequate supplies of antibiotics, and that there, we weren't dealing with a shortage of a particular drug that, you know, was vital to our community. So can you share any more information?
Well, there are no antivirals for COVID-19, so there's no specific treatment in terms of an antiviral or a vaccine for COVID-19. The vaccine is still approximately a year off, and we don't know how long it'll be for the antivirals. There are some pharmaceutical manufacturers that are working to develop antivirals treatment for COVID-19. Gilead, for example, one of the major U.S. pharmaceutical developers, does have a medication which they were using for Ebola, which they believe may have benefit for people with COVID-19. But there are no specific, again, antivirals for COVID-19, which means there is no specific treatment for it right now. There are pharmaceutical manufacturers working on it. In general, we have adequate other drugs, but there is no specific treatment for COVID-19 right now.
Right. I guess I was just thinking of drugs and the supply chain in China, and a lot of the drugs or ingredients that we need for certain things, you know, comes from that country.
There have been a couple of shortages identified by the federal government in terms of specific drugs, but in general, overwhelmingly, we still have, fortunately, almost all of the drugs we need in the U.S. are still available. The good news is that in China, the production is starting to ramp back up again, because it appears, at least according to the numbers that they're reporting in terms of new infections and new cases and the death rates are coming down. And so China is starting to ramp back up again. Now, we don't know how long it will take before they're back into full production. So there still may be some shortages that occur, but there are not widespread drug shortages in the U.S. at this point in time.
Okay, so our listeners can be assured of that at this point.
That is correct, yes.
Okay. Is there anything else as you reach out to your counterparts in other states and globally? You know, what's the biggie right now? You know, containment is, we're not doing that, but we're trying our best to kind of, I guess, limit the spread.
We are doing a lot to limit the spread, and that's a huge initiative. And as we've said previously, and as the messaging comes out from many, you know, Department of Health, the CDC, it's very, very important that people practice good hand hygiene, that they do not touch their nose, eyes, or mouth with their hands that haven't been washed, that they sneeze, you know, they cover their mouth and nose when they sneeze or cough. Those are very, very important things to practice. People are wiping down, you know, tabletops and things like that, flat surfaces, which is a good practice before you touch them. So there is a lot that we can do. It's still, if you haven't had a flu vaccine, it's still a good practice to get the flu vaccine, because that does help build up immunity, and there's still value because there's still a lot of the flu out there. And so there are good practices that we can all practice to help stop the spread of this disease here in Hawaii.
And the concern that folks might have about our most fragile in the community, you know, we have seen this past week where there are just stricter controls over who comes and goes, you know, at long-term facilities, skilled nursing homes, that kind of a thing. And so, you know, I imagine we'll be seeing more?
That is correct. And that's to protect our very fragile residents and our kapuna in these different settings. So many of our members, if not most of them, have been screening visitors already for a while. So what they're asking visitors to do, some of them may be doing temporal screening or you know, to check their temperature, or they will be asking them questions, you know, do you have a fever? Do you have a cough? Do you have shortness of breath? Have you traveled to South Korea, Italy, for example? Have you been in contact with someone who has been suspected of having or has been confirmed to have COVID-19? So screening has been going on. Patient screening has been going on for a while. Now we're taking it to that next level, where visitors are being restricted from visiting our long-term care facilities, or in the process of being restricted, and basically to only essential personnel, or essential visitors, or what is deemed to be an essential visitor. And again, that is to really stop the spread of this disease, to protect our elderly. Now, I know that's a challenge, but what, you know, family members can do, what friends can do is they can call these residents if the resident has a phone or an iPad, a smartphone or an iPad, they can FaceTime, they can do things like that. You've seen the pictures, I'm sure, of people who are, you know, waving outside the window and at least visiting, at least so there's a, you know, they can see people's face. So there are different ways of communicating with these, with residents in these facilities. But this is all about protecting them and stopping the spread of the disease, because we don't want to have it happen in Hawaii. We want to avoid, if at all possible, what is happening in other states happening here in Hawaii.
Right. We don't want to see mandatory quarantines. Everything's voluntary at this point, and self-quarantine.
Well, that is correct. But the governor is, and the Department of Health, they are evaluating what is going on. You know, America is a free country, and so in general, the government respects the freedom of individuals. But at the same time, we want to have reasonable controls and guidelines and policies to protect the public against the spread of disease.
Okay, well, I appreciate your time. And then I don't know if you think it'd be useful just to kind of check back every couple of weeks just as this thing, changes.
Well, this will be evolving. And so we expect this to be in the news for the next couple of months, probably at least. It's interesting. I just read an article from Modern Healthcare where they have a conference in May, the middle of May, and they just announced this morning that they believe that this will be over by May. I think the event is on May 19th. So that's interesting that Modern Healthcare believes that this fire, at least the worst of this will be over by May 19. So, but it will, the general consensus is that this will be around for a while yet. We will be dealing with this, but what we're all hoping and what we're all working to do and working very hard to do this is to stop the spread of this disease here in Hawaii.
That was Hilton Rathel of the Hawaii Healthcare Association, which covers hospitals, long-term care, and skilled nursing facilities across the state. He's scheduled to speak at a 2 p.m. news conference on a supplemental emergency proclamation expected to be issued by the governor, all prompted by the COVID-19 pandemic.